The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to Unsound Methods with me, Jamie Batchin.
And me, Lachlan Bloom. For those of you listening to the podcast for the first time, this is part of a series where we talk to other writers about their process and technique.
So in this episode, which is episode 56, we're speaking to the writer Daisy Hilliard. She is the first, as far as we know, first half of an Unsound Methods couple, in that we spoke to her partner, Kayla, back in episode 27.
Yeah, almost half the podcast ago.
We were different people back then.
A lot has happened in intervening years.
I mean, we spoke to him in a face-to-face interview in London before all of the unpleasantness of which we don't speak. From 2020
very onwards. Different days. we spoke to Daisy remotely, but had a really good conversation about her writing. And as you say, she's the author of fiction and non-fiction. We mainly focused on the fiction side and what drives her to write fiction and how she goes about doing that on a practical level.
Yeah, we covered quite a few things, particularly her morning routine, avoiding the internet and quite a lot of the external world, I think, in many ways, for the first portion of the day to get writing done, fitting that around the other aspects of life. We talked a little bit about how she deals with the pandemic in her novel, but how I was quite keen not to call it a pandemic novel, and it really isn't. But it was an interesting conversation about why that feels like a slightly negative term, something that might put people off, and why I would be at pains to say, while it does have this sort of sideways look at the experiences, it's not what we would call a pandemic novel.
Yeah, it was interesting sort of reflecting on that eternal question for writers between shutting yourself off from the world, which is what a lot of the pandemic was involved for everybody, but that balance between shutting yourself off and engaging with the world and finding things to write about is, an age-old question for all writers, I think.
So, without any further ado, Daisy Hilliard. How long have you been writing as a serious endeavour?
Yeah, I like the way you phrase that, because I think writing on and off for a long time, but I would definitely say that I started writing seriously when I was 22. So I'm 39 now. And that was when I just started really writing at the beginning of the day, with the best part of the day, and for as long as I could afford in terms of other, you know, earning money and these days looking after kids. And since then, yeah, I've tried to, as frequently as possible and as regularly as possible, just write in the morning for as long as I can afford.
And is that sort of getting up with the sun to do it, or is that sort of once you've got things going and then you have a couple of hours set out or something?
It has been getting up very early for some periods. I prefer to not. I think that sleep is helpful to writing as well. And I like regularity myself, so I like to start at the same time and kind of going to my desk, you know, getting up and doing what I need to do, school run or, you know, sorting things out for the day, and then I'll go to my desk. I sit quietly on my own for a few hours.
Is there a process you have to sort of get into the writing? You know, once you've got breakfast out the way and those sort of tasks and you're actually sat at your desk, do you sort of hit the keys and start writing, or do you have any kind of process or period before you sort of put any words down on the page?
No, it comes as a great relief to me, actually. Sitting at my desk is always like a lovely moment. I have a coffee with me almost always, and it's my first coffee of the day. I don't have that many, I have two. But no, it doesn't feel like I need anything. I try. And it feels like it's a nice moment. It's a good moment. It's a kind of opening out or a sense of relief. And I may start writing immediately, or I may try and sit and think for a bit. I try not to look at other things. I never go on the internet till midday unless I really have to. So it feels like a lovely free moment after the kind of, you know, ordinary bits of getting up or if other things have had to happen before I get to my desk. It's like this nice kind of moment where I get to, yeah, go into this other place. And that's a pleasure for me. It doesn't feel like I have to, it doesn't feel like I'm going into work. It feels like I'm going into being free from things. That's not always been the case. I think the longer I've written, the more I enjoy it. But I do, I am also definitely aware of tendency that I have and that a lot of writers have to, it is more difficult, you know, if there's noise or it's nice to be in like a room of one's own with a really nice desk and kind of, and I'm aware of trying not to let myself be dependent on, you know, needing a coffee that's made like this or needing complete silence or, you know, needing a particular space or light, because I feel like that just disadvantages, you know, it's like you're more free the more you can do it anywhere or anyhow. And it's, you know, I don't want to become kind of brittle and sort of shut into that. Those constraints are real, but I try to, as much as I can, kind of keep them at arm's length. I want to ask how it is for you too. It's funny with an interview, and I know we don't have limitless time, but it's sort of strange having a conversation like this because it's interesting. It is a lone experience. You know, you do it on your own, and my partner's a writer, and increasingly I know writers, but I still feel like I get a lot from talking to other people because people do it so differently, and you, it's often surprising, I think, how differently people will do it practically. Just one reason why this podcast is interesting. But how do you two do it? How do you like?
Yeah, I don't tend to have a set routine as such. I think it's, for me, it kind of depends on having some kind of impetus going into writing some piece of a section of writing. I kind of, when the idea is there, I kind of want to, you know, I might be stopped from doing that by other things in the world, but when I can sit down and write it, I have a rough idea of, you know, the next few steps, and then hopefully those steps lead me on to the steps afterwards. But that could be at different times of the day, and obviously that depends on you know, other things going on in the world. But yeah, I think I find when I'm most productive, I kind of come in with a few steps to sort of run into it, and then that hopefully leads on. Sometimes those first few steps, you think, oh, that's a brilliant idea, start writing it down, and then run out of steam and go, oh, maybe it wasn't such a great idea. I it's hard to put a finger on where that initial impetus to write comes from, because sometimes I'll sit with an idea and think this is good, but I'd somehow never get to the stage of putting pen to paper, and it's just sort of sitting, it feels like it needs longer to gestate. And other times I think of it and, you know, 10 minutes later I'm writing it. It's hard. I don't think I'm consciously sort of weighing up, oh, this needs to sit there for another month or something, or 6 months or however long, but something somehow clicks when it feels right and you start writing.
I try to be disciplined. That's one of the things that we've got as a benefit out of doing this podcast is speaking to how so many people and hearing how they do it. But I try to sort of carve time out, but that is inevitably the time that's really available is once the day of the sort of day job is done and, you know, my daughter's asleep, and then you've got that little bit of time at the end of the day, and it feels like pushing writing right to the end of everything. And then inevitably, if there's something else that you need to give more urgent attention to, it gets squeezed. So I sort of try to find those little snatches of time. I have a sort of a Google Doc. I'm sure other real-time interactive document editing software is available. And just throw ideas at that. And then once there's enough there to have a shape and sort of pull it out, I'll go there. But I do also live with that kind of anxiety and frustration that makes me quite tetchy when I know there's something that's taking up a lot of my mental thought and I really desperately want to be able to give more time to it, and have to quite selfishly ask for like 2 or 3 hours of a weekend to just sort of sit down and do things. But I mean, it's all about finding someone who's understanding to sort of share your life with, who is happy to support that.
Very much so. I feel like that sense of desire is something that I've yeah, like an impetus or something building that you actually want to write about is something that I value more and more highly the more I write. I think I used to make myself kind of feel that I had to get like word counts on the page or kind of, and I increasingly value time spent thinking, just like thinking and not writing or researching or, you know, but also just, yeah, like the desire of it. And I definitely do the last few years, you know, I feel like writing may not be rewarding out in the world. It may not, you know, I think for a lot of people I've taught writing a lot, and it's, you come to writing with an expectation or like a hope of some kind of recognition or you know, reward. And that just may never come, or if it does come, it may escalate. And increasingly I try to just be all right with like the day to day. And the best way to do that is to like have a good time writing, you know, as long as you're not doing something really, writing something really dubious or wicked. I think that kind of sense of like wanting to write about something and taking pleasure in writing about it is something I value more highly rather than less as it goes on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the sort of integrity of the work and how much you can realize what you set out to do, or maybe it changes along the way, but yeah, the fact that you can never have any influence over what other people will feel about it or react to it or pay any attention to it.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, weirdly, I think I feel like that's become much more important to me over the past kind of couple of years, and that it's almost like it's going to be a worthwhile endeavor to produce something that, yeah, might not necessarily go anywhere. I don't like the idea of dedicating 4 or 5 years of my life to doing that, but actually, you know, you'd be a better writer at the end of it.
Yeah, and I still want my stuff to be read and kind of, it's just like there's no like win, you know. There's really funny old Mitchell and Webb sketch where David Mitchell is talking about football, which he clearly hates, and he's talking about like, he just kind of goes into this like insane like rant about like so-and-so wins and then they win some more and then they win some more and then it's the end of the season and then you start again. And they haven't, you know, I can't remember exactly what he says, but it's really like this kind of endlessly like winning and then like back to zero and then like, you know, you maybe inch up a bit. And I feel like, yeah, it's like where you spend your time is in doing the writing. And so it's like that's winning, right? It's kind
of which is always bad if you feel that it's really unenjoyable while doing it. If it's just suffering the whole time, then you sort of think, I've got this mad compulsion to do it, but I like to think I'm not going to absolutely hate it all the way through, because it's, yeah.
Yeah, and it's... It's hard sometimes, I think, for everybody, right? Like, it's not, you know, it's not always easy. But, yeah, the more you, yeah, and don't act so well to people around you and, you know, it's like, you can minimise that, I think, a person can.
I mean, you're in a household with two writers, if I'm correct in saying that. Like, do you have this sort of same... You have to sort of help each other out, or like accept that you can recognize when each of you is in a certain part of the process and want to kind of give them extra space.
Yeah, it was funny when you said that you were like two writers, and I thought, well, Caleb's a writer, but who's the other one? And I was like, oh, you mean me? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's not. So, yeah, my husband is a writer. We've been married 10 years, been together a long time, and both been writers for most of that time, really, or we've studied together at university. It is something sometimes that I feel a bit of apprehension about, you know, writer couples are not a particularly, you know, fine tradition in marriage, terms of marriages in general. But I have found it, yeah, to be a very good thing in my life. It's nice to be able to talk to somebody who understands, and it's also nice when we don't share stuff. You know, when you have a relationship where you've got so much that is involved and dependent, and then you kind of have this like other world that you can go to and be separate, or you can, I love to read his writing and it feels like I'm seeing like something that I don't get to see in the day to day. So it's been overwhelmingly positive. It is difficult occasionally, you know, want to write about, see something and talk about it, and, or, you know, there's like tensions about, my partner writes autofiction, and the character of the wife is featured in a number of his texts. I've never really written about him.
Do you ever have a tug of war over, you know, an event or something that you both think, oh, that would make some good, that'd make a good part of what I'm working on, but you both kind of want to own it in a way, or does that never come up?
I think once or twice there's been one or two things where he's sort of said like, oh, I'd like to write about this thing that I've already written about, or I've sort of said, oh, I'm going to, you know, steal this, or we generally like, you know, have a bit of a sense of humor about it. One thing that a piece of advice that I found very valuable was when I was starting out doing my PhD, so my PhD was in literature, really, but I was writing about historical scientific texts, so I don't really know much about literary texts in that time. My supervisor said at the beginning of my research, she said, at some point over the next few years, you're going to see somebody's brought out a book with like the same title as your thesis, and you're going to think, I've done all this research and it's just dead in the water. Somebody's like beaten me to it. And she was like, it's not your book. They're going to have written something completely different, even if it seems like they're doing the same research on the same subject and they've looked at the same new documents. And I found that very comforting to think about as a writer. Another story that is a similar sort of has a similar content, but I really love, and I don't know if this is true or not, it's actually something Caleb, my partner, told me. It's that there's something in Kafka's diaries where he's worried that he's like writing Dickens pastiche. And I just think it's just such a delicious idea that Kafka thought, oh God, I'm just ripping off Dickens. Like everybody's just going to think, who's this sub Dickens guy? Like, you know, and I think that again, like I find it comforting because it kind of gives me confidence that you sort of, it's all right, you know, if people write about the same stuff or, you know, conflicting ideas about the same things, like you don't have to take it too seriously. You probably look more different than you think.
I love that thing about Kafka. Yeah, that a writer as singular as him was concerned in that direction.
Especially Dickens, like the disconnect between the two styles is quite a gulf. Do you find you spend a lot of time sort of thinking about the voice or the how you sort of inhabit the ideas? Or is the voice just something that emerges as you write?
I do think about voice and form and what a story needs. I think about the reader more in terms of story. I think the kinds of books that I love to read are more often traditional forms, or what are kind of thought of as traditional forms. You know, a kind of I like a plot that develops and unfolds and kind of. But that hasn't been the kind of book that's come to me or that I've been able to write. So I do try to think about story and how to give the reader enough, you know, to keep going, because it's a lot of time that you ask if you've written a whole book of them. I try to think about, sort of forward momentum, or at least some kind of momentum, some like enticement, something to some return on their investment, let's say.
Do you find that there's a sort of trade-off between, like you mentioned earlier about sitting down with a coffee and that sort of freedom of inhabiting the space of writing in the morning? I feel like there's sometimes a balance between freedom of just writing, being free to go any direction, and then there's this sort of baggage, and that baggage can sort of build up and up the further you get into a piece. You know, when you start with nothing, then obviously every avenue is open, but as you kind of build more words, as the sort of body of the piece grows, there are relationships, and then there's also more ideas. Or I find, you know, the day before you're starting to think things and maybe take notes or have ideas for what you're going to put in the next time you sort of sit down. I guess, do you, when you sit down, have you got notes that you've, have you jotted something down the evening before, or do you have anything around you? You said you don't look on the internet, but have you got your own kind of mental notes in place to structure what you're going to write, or is it just completely free for the day, and then it's like the editing process that you kind of work those elements in?
No, I do work from notes, and I like to have some notes that are interesting to me, and I can kind of move back and forth from them to to keep myself interested in it. And yeah, definitely, I feel sometimes, as you say, you sort of build up this kind of architecture, and I feel quite often like nobody's going to be interested in this. Like, who am I to like tell, you know, it's like that. And I feel like, again, sort of have to just feel okay in the doing of it, because then if people do feel this is not of interest to me, and if everybody like rejects it, it's kind of like, well, it was definitely of interest to me, and it was what I wanted to write about and what I considered was worth writing about. So I try to step back quite a lot and to keep notes of things that I think are interesting and worth writing about.
What sort of notes would you tend to take? Are they kind of those sort of plot elements that drive it forward, or a color, or, you know, two words, or you write down a short paragraph, or?
Yeah, interesting. Because it does feel very private. It's like, and I guess it changes. I mean, you know, I've written two novels over the last, like, yeah, like 12 years, and it does feel like everything, it's like your whole, you're making a little kind of model of the world as you see it, or experiences it's led up to you. I keep a sort of diary that I keep more or less regularly, and I'll often put into there like an idea for a story, something somebody had told me that happened or that I'd read about in a newspaper. It, you know, more or less trivial. I was just looking back through it from like 10 years ago, and I found that I'd written something about like how there was a fertilizer used in China on some watermelons that made them just grow bigger and bigger and bigger until they exploded. And then they had these like big fields full of exploded watermelons. I don't think that's going to go into a book anywhere, but like, you know, I'd written it down. And then things that are more serious as well, or notes from, you know, things that other writers have said, or people have told me, or, you know, whatever. And then I'll have documents that are to do with the book, with some kind of key scenes or dialogue or some research that I've done. But again, I try to be quite strict in editing that and not letting in things that I think are trivial.
Do you have a sort of distinctive researching sort of phase, a note-taking phase before you start writing in earnest? Or do you sort of try to get the ball rolling on the actual writing process and take notes as you go and ideas come to you during that period?
I haven't actually. I'm quite sort of anti-scholarly in my approach like that. I wouldn't rule it out if I was writing a historical novel or something. I'd like to set something between sort of 2008 and 2011, and that's more or less historical now, so I might do some research for that. But it's perhaps because of my own background coming from that much more. My first novel had four very detailed historical and very sort of working with historical narratives, and worked a lot with primary materials. I was in the archives a lot, and I did a PhD that was also based on archival research. So I feel like where I need to put my energy,
were you rewriting?
And where I like to be is in a place that's focusing more on telling a story and imagining something into being. And maybe that's partly because that, you know, I feel that I know where I am with that. Like, I know where it is if I need it. You know, you go to the library and you call up your documents, and that's nice. But I definitely feel that I've moved away from that to some extent now.
Donc, on vient de vous dire que la dernière période de mes recherches littéraires comportait une part d'autobiographie.
Just been told that the last phase of his literary researches, his literary work, have been preoccupied with a kind of autobiographical search.
Et ça a causé une sorte de scandale littéraire.
It caused a kind of literary scandal.
The kind of research that I really have loved and has been just a total delight in my life has been going out and talking to people. Like, that's something I discovered when I wrote my nonfiction book, and it makes me feel very alive and and just like learning so much, or like changing what I think the world is by kind of talking to strangers and asking them bigger questions than I would probably ask the people around me.
Is that something you've done in fiction with a view to, you know, writing a piece of fiction, interviewed or spoken to strangers?
It's something I would like to do more. I've done it a bit. I've spent some, but it was a long time ago now, pre-pandemic. Often these things take a while, don't they? I spent some time in a hospice, and I was talking to people who were dying, and I was and doctors there, and I was just interested in what life feels like from there. And I haven't done anything with that yet, but I might do one day.
That's interesting, because I thought, like, especially after having a book published, I felt like that it opens the door a bit to doing that, and that there are certain people I could approach rather than I'm just some random guy off the street who wants to talk to you about this. I could come and talk to, I was thinking about sort of some things to do with how this sort of legal process works, or things that the police have to deal with that I'm sort of interested in. Not sort of for crime fiction, but I haven't yet got around to doing it, because my worry is I would need to have a definite plan about what I want to write about. Otherwise I feel like, yeah, just sort of being slightly intrusive, but it should all be material that you're gathering. So
it does seem a lot braver somehow to go to approach somebody saying I'm writing a piece of fiction. Cause I mean, for me, it seems sort of woolier. The whole practice of writing fiction seems woolier than a non-fiction piece. I could imagine, okay, I'm writing this about this period or about this topic, and it's a piece of non-fiction. I need to speak to these people. And it seems a lot more of a business transaction in a way to approach someone and say, look, can I get your thoughts on this? Whereas to approach someone and say, I'm writing a piece of fiction and I want to get your thoughts, it seems a braver step for me anyway. It's not something I've done, but I think it is fascinating. And obviously you get
ethical questions about, you know, whose story it is, and that's a kind of difficult area. But I also think that it opens you up to, you know, as the kind of contemporary sort of, it's a bit of a sort of, what would you say? It's a bit of one of those things that people accuse one another of, while it's also to some extent true of everybody, but going outside of your bubble, I guess, or like talking to people who maybe have very different life experiences or different experiences of what it is to be alive. I just feel like I'm happy to do that. I've really, not because I kind of theoretically think it's good, but because my experience has been that it's changed me, and I've had some very like good experiences. And I think that the people have said that, you know, the conversations have been good for them as well. And so in a way I feel like if it doesn't come into writing, that's okay. But I would also say to you that one thing that has really surprised me about it since the beginning of writing The Second Body, which was my nonfiction book, which was probably back in 2015, is that how it's like, I find it quite sort of poignant, I guess, if that's not too cheesy, how eager people are to talk about their lives. Like, if I contact people out of the blue, I very, very rarely, you know, sometimes people don't reply, but like people just are happy to talk and so generous with their time and with their experiences. And, you know, I've always felt very tentative about sort of saying, oh, I might use it like this, I might use it like that. And one thing that struck me in a slightly dubious way is how little people care about what I'm going to do with it. You know, to the extent that somebody I interviewed once was in Germany, and they emailed me recently and said, oh, should we meet up? And they hadn't clocked that I wasn't like living in their city, that I'd like gone there as a writer to interview them. You know, they thought I just lived there and was a kind of, and they hadn't really taken in who I was. They wanted to talk about their own work, and that's really good. But it's kind of an interesting ethical question then for the writer about, like, you know, what do you do with people's experiences when they're given so freely? And I feel like I'm sort of submerged in all this kind of discourse about like appropriation and like, but then it's like everything's just out there, you know, people, they're just people like living their lives and happy. I spoke with a friend who has worked in refugee camps for a couple of decades, and you know, I was asking him about that, and he was talking about how difficult that line is as well, that people feel that they want their stories told, right? And they want people with a platform to tell their stories. But how do you kind of break down a platform? I mean, I'm not writing about refugees. But this is what he was thinking about. It's like when you don't have the agency to kind of change who gets a platform, like, you know, and people are asking to have their stories communicated, like what do they do? Like, what's the, what position, you know, can a person take on that?
I guess there's quite a, there's so many levels of where people are coming from with their story, and how there's some stories that are obviously hugely political, or they just are on a wave of what is happening at a time, that any way you tell it, it's going to, you know, if you start telling a story about refugees, there's so many aspects of sort of macro things going into that. Whereas if somebody just tells you a story about going to the shop or something, and then you use that, it's a whole different calculation.
And it's so place dependent and context dependent, and you have to think so carefully about before they use. Sorry, I cut in though.
it's not something I've really done, and I wouldn't really know where to start in terms of going out to ask people about writing fiction, because I guess most of my fiction you have to draw on what people say to an extent, but to actually approach someone, I'd feel like I need something more structured than I'm just writing. And I'd feel a little bit reluctant in case I did get caught in that. I think this would be great as this within the plot or something, but it's going to involve making that person the bad guy or something. But it would be great within that context, but they're probably not going to like that.
Yeah, but it's just fiction then, Mal, isn't it? So it doesn't matter, you know? You just tell them it's fiction. It's not. Just talked about it, it's fine. I mean, because you said about Caleb writing auto-fiction, and there is, you know, the wife character that features. Have you and he ever had a conversation about the kind of, if I say the ethics of that, that makes it sound a little bit stricter, because obviously there's an ethical consideration as soon as you start doing it, but... have you ever talked about what the kind of, whether there should be any boundaries on that, or whether,
Absolutely. Yeah. We've talked about it and, several times, and it's been very interesting to me to see, you know, a wife character who has my middle name portrayed in, as a character in a novel. It's very interesting to me as a writer to observe the feelings that raises, and the, you know, see what it feels like, I guess. And we do talk about that. I mean, I think, you know, as you say, Lachlan, it's very much dependent on who is writing and what's being written. And, you know, I wouldn't want to make any kind of generalized claims, I suppose, about what a person could or should, is allowed to write or is not allowed to write. But yeah, there definitely are some boundaries and some kind of lines that I think, you know, I would like to think a writer would draw for themselves. And at the same time, I like the idea of, you know, I believe in complete freedom, that, you know, that a writer can, may need to go somewhere, you know, that, and it may, a piece of writing may make that worthwhile, but it very much depends on the piece of writing. So it's, you know.
Like you were talking of Kafka and Dickens, you know, if you imagine Kafka worrying, I'm sure he did worry about everything, but worrying that he'd, I don't know, Max Brod has told him something about a trial that was happening in Prague, and I've used that idea of a trial to write a novel. Everyone's going to think I'm this big fraud that ripped off my friend's idea, and nobody reads that and thinks it's actually about any real trial. The experience of reading it is so far removed from what I guess you could legitimately, you know, it's called the trial. It is in some sense about a trial. That might have been an idea that sparked it in a conversation with somebody. But yeah, you're never really sure how it's going to be, or I feel you're never even sure for yourself how you're going to feel about the finished piece. So never mind what somebody else is going to think about the finished piece afterwards. Yeah. It's another leap.
Very much so. Have you had somebody ask me the other day, like, have you had readers come to you and tell you something about yourself or about your book that you didn't? Because my experience is you have that all the time. Like, people describe it back to you in ways you would never have described it, or will observe things that you hadn't seen in it. Yeah, have you two had that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Some of the sort of observations that people have made are things that make total sense to me as well. And it didn't begin to figure in my mind consciously when I was writing it. But yeah, there's been a couple of things that, like, connections between things that I just think, oh, yeah, well spotted.
Yeah.
Daisy, I wanted to ask you about, on the sort of subject of using things from real life. I think you're the first writer we've spoken to, certainly in terms of work that we've read, who has dealt with the pandemic and what that experience was like when we were living in lockdown. I'm sort of interested in your sort of decision to refer to it in Emergency, and how you sort of feel about it now in retrospect, because I feel like this is just speaking personally, but like my memory of it and how kind of crazy it was and the mindset we were in has faded very quickly. So I think actually looking at books that were written about it at that time now feels quite important and useful.
That's interesting that you say that, because I feel like almost universally, when people speak about like a COVID novel, there's this kind of immediate sort of, the primary premise is like eye roll, you know, like nobody wants to. I'm not even particularly speaking about my novel, but I've just sort of noticed that there seems to be a sort of like, oh God, here come the COVID novels kind of thing. And that's both maybe because people, you know, it's not the greatest part of recent history to think about for a lot of people. And then also just this sort of sense of like writers piling onto like a theme, you know. I think that for me, yeah, I would see it actually as quite, it was both a sort of very personal decision, in the sense that I'd been thinking, I wanted to write a novel that followed stories of characters that were many different people in a loosely knit community, so different people or living close to one another but not necessarily close to one another, or of the same sort of identities, and also of other species, so plants and animals. And I felt very urgent desire to write about that. I feel that there's so much in the world that fiction hasn't even begun to imagine, and I find that just very exciting to write about. I feel like there are so many stories that are out there, and I also do feel that it is something that we need, or that I need now, is kind of stories that do show a living world beyond the individual, and show that there's life outside you, and you can maybe kind of respect that and enjoy it and appreciate it and just see that it's happening. So I kind of wanted to write this. I was working on a creative writing research project as a postdoc that was supposed to be writing this novel. I did the whole research project and didn't write the novel because I just wasn't there. And then in the pandemic, I think there was something about the quality of that time that, you know, I think a lot of people felt a kind of charge to the experiences that we weren't having. So like the idea of hugging somebody became loaded and intense in a way that it maybe hadn't felt, you know, when you just go to visit your parents and you hug them, and, you know, pre-COVID. And similarly, there was this kind of, I had this sense of like a charge and an excitement in the outside world that I couldn't go to when it's kind of sealed off. And then this just came to me the other day, actually. It wasn't what I thought of it at the time, but I think there's, I had a sense that it had to be a part of the novel, that charge or that feeling. And it was kind of a formal thing in the way that a painter might use contrasting colours, that I wanted the novel to feel very full of life with loads of characters and loads of stories just all like rolling and pouring on top of one another. And in order to heighten that feeling that I wanted to create, it made formal sense to counterpoint it with somebody who was very isolated, closed in on their own. So it's not really a COVID novel. In fact, there's probably only a few thousand words that are set with this person on her own in a home, not in her home, not seeing anybody. But I felt that I needed that counterpoint in the novel to make it communicate in the way that I wanted it to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just to go back to a bit you said at the start there, I would, and because of this kind of prejudice that we developed, I would say that it's actively not a COVID novel because, as you said, I don't know, I sort of feel like that would put me off something a little bit just at the moment. Maybe I'm not ready for it, or also because we were all so hyper-focused on the experiences of what was going on then. So I think I should sort of say to people that it just features, a small bit about it. But it's just interesting to be able to sort of go back to that mindset, even if it is sort of juxtaposed with a world that was nothing like that.
And there's something as well about, I wonder what it is with the human, there's something about the recent past that I think is sort of a bit like embarrassing or something, like maybe that's what we need to push away from. Or like, I think of the generation of writers who were sort of really lifted up as these kind of great writers, like a kind of canon, like the generation before I was kind of studying that at school. You know, you do like Ted Hughes and Angela Carter, and Bruce Chatwin maybe was read in that way as these kind of great writers of their age. And I feel like that kind of generation is a bit like, well, like nobody wants to read them at the moment. And it'll be interesting to see whether that is they've just dropped out because they're not, you know, they haven't made writing that people still speaks to people, or whether there will be, whether it is to do with the kind of era and how, you know, we sort of despise what's just come before us, and then they'll kind of be restored in a way that maybe early 20th century writers, the Wolfs and the Joyces, are kind of, you know, revered now still, I think, by many people, certainly.
I guess there's a sort of filtering element in that. I don't know what the generation after the Joyces were. There were probably other writers in the mix then that have since vanished, and Joyce's remained. The ones that withstand the test of time, withstand the test of time. But you don't know which those are going to be until several generations on. And I guess that process holds true. And as you say, the immediately preceding generation, there's a sort of rebellion or opposition to that often. Not related question, but you've written nonfiction, and you sort of talk there of the sort of drivers to write Emergency as a novel. Do you have a view on what, you know, why write fiction? Why not just write nonfiction? What is fiction doing, do you feel, when either as a reader or a writer that's going somewhere different than you can get to with nonfiction?
Yeah, I don't have an answer. Like when I think about it, sort of logically, I feel that they break down in the middle. You know, there is so much fiction in arrangement, and in every nonfiction, you know, so much story, and in fiction, of course, there's so much reality, even like a crazy sci-fi thing. But for me, the fiction does do something. I think there is something more large that it can capture, because it doesn't try to present, because it doesn't present that it has some inexplicable elements that can only be told as story. But I couldn't define it, but I do believe in it. I like to read fiction. I think that it is I think that it can do more, but I suppose I can't define it, but I also don't really want to because I feel that's maybe part of what it does.
I mean, did you have any, was there any sort of hesitation or thought before committing to write Emergency, say, as a novel, where you, was there any part of you that could have seen writing a non-fiction piece on the same feelings and the same ideas, or do you feel it's sort of part of the work itself? You just, okay, I know this is going to be fiction and that just what feels right, or are you kind of weighing up between how much fiction, how much non-fiction is in this all the way until you get to the end, and then you go, oh, it turns out that was a piece of fiction rather than non-fiction, or vice versa.
Yeah, that's very interesting to me because it is such a it's like it doesn't come to me like that. Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like a kind of decision. I do see a novel. I do experience writing a novel as a kind of it's just the way I see the world. It's like the way I see things happening, and I feel that a story needs to be told about that world. Like it needs to be that, it needs to be presented. It needs to be, told, narrated, storied, whatever you know, the kind of verb you tell. And I've written loads of nonfiction. I mean, about the same stuff, because that's just the stuff that I see. That's just what I see. And so when I write nonfiction, I write about it in the world in similar ways, or, similar things that I see. But a novel is a kind of whole and entire thing, I guess, where it feels like that to me.
I know you have to head off for a train shortly. I just wanted to ask on the sort of practical side of how we do things. Are you someone who sort of edits as you go along, or are you someone who gets the material all together and then goes back, whether fiction or non-fiction, and then sort of wrangles it in drafts?
It's been so different because I've written three books, and everyone, I'm like a different person. And with Emergency, I did have a rule that I wanted to just not to try to finish a book, but to try to make every bit interesting and just write interesting bits and then move sequentially, no jumping, no like doing this bit and then going back and filling that in, but just moving forward and not moving forward until I'd written something that I liked and enjoyed, reading. So that was very forward, it was just a single kind of movement. And then I went back through that and edited it quite lightly, and then it was edited again fairly lightly by my publisher. So that was, I mean, obviously that sounds a lot more straightforward than it is. It's, a lot of time kind of feeling that it's just really, really terrible. And, kind of writing scenes that, getting stuck on, getting snagged on bits and writing scenes that just like, dross, and then having to delete it all and go back. But I liked writing like that. I liked writing forward from the beginning, because that's how a reader will read it, right?
Mm-hmm. In terms of the editing or the working out which bits are dross or not, do you read aloud at all? Is that part of your process? Yes. At all to take? Did you wait until a certain point to like, okay, I've got draft one, I'm now I can read it, or are you sort of writing a sentence and saying out loud to see how it sits before going on to the next sentence?
So, I mean, you must have found this right when you read in front of an audience, you suddenly notice what's kind of what's alive and how much, how very much is dead. But for my, as one of the things that I do as a day job, I mean, I work freelance, I do bits of writing and various other, occasional teaching and stuff. But one of the things that I do is I run a small community organization, and we read aloud with people who maybe don't access literature in other ways for different reasons. And it's not too pompous to say, it's been a real education for me, just having to read so much aloud. And then also to discuss it with people who don't necessarily read that much, and to see that, like, that, like, often their overwhelming indifference to great works of literature, which is just good. It's just good to be around, you know. It is like a relief when you're writing all the time and it feels so serious, and then you're kind of like, okay, most people don't care about this, so that's all right, you know. But so, yeah, over the last few years doing that, reading aloud has become a lot more important to me, and I've seen a lot, you know, we sometimes read whole novels aloud so that you kind of see the shape of things, and that's taught me a lot about my own writing. And in terms of the nuts and bolts of it, which you asked about, I probably would tend to write a whole scene or passage and then read that aloud and see how it works, not just as the sentences work, which probably for me is something that happens inside my head. I would rarely listen to a sentence and then think, oh, this sentence is ugly, I need to, but I can definitely hear, you know, the way the pace will pick up and slow down in a way that's awkward, or, you know, it's for me, what doesn't come so easily to me is that kind of experience, which I hear a lot better aloud.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I think it's something I kind of forget to do. I can quite easily get absorbed in sort of writing on the screen, or just editing on the screen, but just in a more kind of cerebral way. There's something different when you actually say it out loud, and I think that's important. But I feel it should be more a part of my practice to improve that. I don't know, there's a fluidity that you get when it's something that you can read out loud and it feels natural, and when you there's lots of things you can read out loud and it works, but it's not quite natural, and you don't know that until you come to the point of reading out loud and going, why is that not working?
Yes, it's very interesting to me that you say that, because I feel that resistance as well, and I think it's surprisingly strong. I gave a talk at a university recently and asked people, somebody talked about reading their thesis aloud to themselves, and I was asking people how much they do it, and a lot of people were saying, like, have you heard about that? I really love this, like, thing about, there was like a psychology study, psychological research study, in which people were set with a piece of paper and a pen and told to write, or they would get small, painful electric shocks. And often people would prefer to take the shocks than to write. And I think that is kind of telling about it. There is something harder than it should be. It should be just such an indulgence, yeah. And it should be so easy, but there is something that is strange, and particularly about reading aloud, that maybe because you know it's going to show you all the work you have to do, or the pain of listening to all these, you know, stupid and terrible things that you've written, and you know how stupid and terrible you are. I don't know, you know, that, but
in that psychological, I mean, for me, I feel there's some connection between the writing fiction and the, I mean, in a sense, we're kind of writing fiction. If you look at sort of the a lot of brain science kind of suggests that our idea of the self and so on is, it's a kind of fiction there, that you kind of tell yourself after the event why you did something. It's not necessarily what is causing you to do it before the event. And it feels like there's some, I mean, obviously, some people will sort of walk down the street speaking their thoughts out loud, but certainly within society, it's not generally, you kind of might get some funny looks if you do that. So there's you kind of grow up learning to not do that and restrict any just verbalization of thoughts coming in your head. So in some sense, it feels like fighting against that. But also then there's this idea that you're at some level creating this fictional self in your head, and you don't want to unravel that too much. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do all the things you need to do to be able to sit down and write, because you're going to not have a self anymore. I don't know. I think it's a fascinating combination of factors going on in there somewhere. And yeah, I don't know how it plays out to stop you actually just reading aloud and improving the writing.
And a lot of authors, you know, some authors, not necessarily a majority, but I would definitely, you know, kind of quite quiet awkward in social set, and then you kind of expose your inner life, and it is quite. And I feel, again, like particularly with fiction, this is partly why it's, you're kind of saying, you're making a model of the world, or you're like, this is the world, this is what it's like, this is what people think and feel and do, or this is what things look like. And like, what if that's just totally wrong, you know? And that's like, you know, you're kind of exposing what you see and what you think are your kind of premises, and you may be just completely foolish in doing so. So yeah, I kind of
otherwise. I mean, it's a hell of a risk, isn't it?
So thank you to Daisy for joining us, and thank you to you for listening. There will be more information about Daisy and her writing in the show notes, and you can find out about the podcast at Unsound Methods on Twitter or at unsoundmethods.co.uk on the internet.
Yeah, and you can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com. I'm also on Medium at lachlanbloom or Twitter at the same.
And you can find out about me and my writing at jamiebatchin.com, on Twitter at jamiebatchin, and on Instagram at jamie_batchin.
Thanks for listening, and do remember to like and subscribe wherever you find this podcast, and to look back at our back catalogue of episodes if you find this interesting. See you again next time.